from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
We have arrived to Friday, and it is time for a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, and have you two until 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a lot to get to over these next couple hours. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting. The phone number, 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. Or if you want to tweet at me, you find me at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. Just keeping you updated on what's going on from a baseball playoff standpoint. The Mets-Dodgers game, they're scoring a lot of runs. They are in the fifth inning, and they have already scored 15 total runs in this game. The Mets have a 10-5 lead in the top of the fifth inning. About 2 minutes ago, this was a 10-2 game, but a three-run home run was hit by the Dodgers, and now they are back within 5 runs. And if the Dodgers were to win this game, they would take the series as they come in with a 3-1 series lead. Mets are trying to keep their season alive. They're on top, but it feels like there's a whole lot of baseball left to be played before all is said and done in that game. And then the Yankees and the Guardians, they're going to get started here in about an hour from now. That game being played in Cleveland, where the Guardians had a fantastic come-from-behind victory last night, and they're trying to win tonight to even up that series at 2 games apiece. Great college football weekend coming up. We're going to talk a lot of college football on the show today, specifically when it comes to Missouri and Illinois from a national top 25 standpoint. There's some really good games on the schedule. Probably the game of the weekend is Texas-Georgia, and that matches up number 1 against number 5. You never know. That could be a preview of the national championship game. That's the game that people seem to be most excited about. But there's some other games this weekend, certainly, that are notable. Alabama and Tennessee, that matches up number 7 against number 11. And then when it comes to games involving two top 25 teams, Illinois, they've got the other matchup as they take on Michigan coming up tomorrow afternoon. Illinois is ranked number 22 in the nation. Michigan is ranked number 24 in the nation. So Illinois has a better ranking than Michigan. They've got a better record than Michigan. Illinois is 5-1 with a 2-1 Big Ten record. Michigan's 4-2 with a 2-1 Big Ten record. The game is being played in Champaign. However, all that being said, it is Michigan who is the favorite in this game. Michigan goes in as about a field goal favorite. So that's what, in Missouri. I think tomorrow is as important of a game that Missouri has had this season. When you really kind of break down the way things had gone, and I didn't think I would have been saying that if you a month ago, I never would have imagined that when talking about Mizzou, I would tell you that a game against Auburn here in the middle of the season is as important of a game as they have, but it really is, because I don't think we've seen the best from Missouri yet. When you look at what they've done this year, they played 2 games against teams that weren't very good, and they dominated them. They got wins against Boston College and Vanderbilt, and in many ways, those at least the Vanderbilt win looks more impressive now than it did then, because we've seen Vanderbilt get a couple big SEC wins, but they didn't look great against Vanderbilt. They didn't look great against Boston College, a team that was in the top 25 when they matched up against them, but you felt fine about the team at that point, and then you didn't feel fine about them when they lost by 31 points to Texas A&M, and last week when they beat UMass. That game doesn't mean a thing. We didn't learn anything about them. All we learned is that they could beat a bad team. All we learned is maybe the better way to say that is we learned that they weren't going to lose against a bad team. But we already knew that because they played 2 bad teams when the season got started. So, yeah, I don't know. This is a big game coming up tomorrow. Auburn's not really good, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're a great football team. They are not, but they are a legit SEC team. They're just 2-4. They haven't won an SEC game yet, but go out and take care of business tomorrow if you're Missouri, and I think people start feeling much, much, much better about the direction that this season may end up going, because they've got so much that's still on the table. Their schedule, it sets up for them to be able to win a lot of games between now and the end of the season. The only game left on the schedule that looks really, really challenging for Missouri is their game against number 7 Alabama in Tuscaloosa here in a couple weeks. outside of that, not that that game's not winnable, but it's probably not a game that they win. The outside of that, every other game that they have, very winnable. Home against Auburn, home against Oklahoma, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, home against Arkansas. You feel pretty good for Mizzou when it comes to those games. Hockey, the Blues are going to get back at tomorrow. They take on the Carolina Hurricanes, trying to get things going. They're coming off a good win against the Islanders, where they won 1-0 and won 1-0 in overtime. So Jake Neighbors had the one goal for the Blues as they knock off the Islanders. And now they're still trying to kind of become a little bit more consistent from an offensive standpoint, because it's what we talked about a couple days ago when we last had a full show. It feels like, and look, this is true about a lot of teams this early on in the season, but it does feel like the Blues are trying to find themselves, that they're using a lot of different line combinations. They don't score a whole lot last night, but they get good goaltending, and now they're going to get back at tomorrow when they take on Carolina. So, like I said, we've got a lot coming up on the program today. The guests that are scheduled here in about 5 minutes or so, Kyle Helms is going to join us. He is a sports anchor and sports reporter for ABC 17 in Columbia and mid-Missouri. We'll talk Mizzou-Auburn with him. Later on this hour, we'll talk with Levi Weaver from The Athletic. He covers Major League Baseball. Get his thoughts on everything going on in the baseball playoffs. And next hour, we'll talk with Doug Bashan. He is the publisher of the Illinois Rivals site, which is the Orange and Blue News. We'll talk with him about the Illinois-Michigan game that's going to be coming up tomorrow. So that's what's coming up on the program tonight. We take you until 8 o'clock. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, continuing to look forward to a very big college football Saturday. And that does include Missouri with, I think, a pretty big game for them as they're looking to bounce back from a couple weeks ago. Their loss against Texas A&M, the game this past weekend, doesn't really feel like it meant all that much. So we're very happy to welcome on right now somebody who covers Mizzou athletics. He is Kyle Helms. He's part of the team at ABC 17 in Columbia and mid-Missouri. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Helms, ABC 17. Kyle, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, how big of a game is this for Missouri, as it really feels like we're still trying to figure out who this team exactly is?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, I think this one's a pretty big one for the Tigers. I mean, Eli Drinkwitz and company got the response they were looking for last week at UMass. You know, they took care of business, but, you know, then again, it's still a lower-level program that they're facing there. This is their first game against an SEC opponent since Texas A&M. So I feel like this is the game that you really want to see what the response is going to be like from Mizzou. The Tigers really, you know, have struggled, you know, at times offensively, and also, you know, are looking to bounce back defensively after struggling against A&M. So I think this one's a huge one. I think this is going to be a very big indication of where the Tigers are going to be at heading into, you know, the home stretch of SEC play and a very key stretch of their schedule before they head to Alabama, and then they welcome Oklahoma to town the week after a bye week.
I'm not trying to be dismissive of what they've done this year. Obviously, a 5-1 record and a top 20 ranking, that's not something to sneeze at. But at the same time, when you look at what they've done this year, their first two games were games against not very good opponents. There were certainly issues that we saw against both Boston College and Vanderbilt. Maybe that Vanderbilt win actually looks a little bit better now than it did at the moment, but still, you didn't feel great about the Tigers after either of those games. They have the loss to Texas A&M, and then they play another not-so-good team in UMass. Is this the opportunity for the Tigers to actually show who they are? It's kind of funny to say that when we're 2 months into the season.
It absolutely is. I mean, Mizzou starts the year with Murray State and Buffalo. They take care of business, really aren't challenged at all. Then, you know, Boston College was ranked at the time whenever they came to town. They, you know, struggled a little bit early, but then took care of business in the second half. Vanderbilt was obviously a big scare, but Vanderbilt's looked pretty good this year, especially in the SEC, beating Alabama and also Kentucky. And then, you know, you look at Texas A&M, which was their biggest test of the year. And, you know, it wasn't a very competitive contest for most of that game. And then you look at UMass, where, you know, again, it's they're on the same, you know, level as Buffalo and Murray State, where it's a game where you know Mizzou is going to go in and should take care of business with the talent that they have. So this game is going to be a good test for them. You know, Auburn has really beat themselves in a lot of games this year. I think they're a little bit better than their 2-4 record might say they are. They got a really explosive offense, and really, if it wasn't for turnovers, you know, we might be talking about them being a little bit, you know, a little bit better record-wise than what they are right now. So I think this is a big test, and Mizzou is back at home, and it's homecoming. They really need to take care of business and get some positive momentum going their way with Alabama knocking on the door.
Luther Burden, I believe, comes off the availability report. That's good news that he appears to be fully healthy. That would have just been obviously very, very bad if that would have if that injury would have turned into something more from last weekend.
Absolutely. It's a big boost to have him back. You know, looking at that injury report, I also think, you know, on Thursday, the Tigers upgraded linebacker Tristan Newsom to probable to play. He was originally questionable. I think that's a big boost, especially since they just lost Khalil Jacobs to a season-ending injury at UMass as well. So now they're going to have a little bit more depth in that room. But the big question still is Nate Noel going to play in this game? You know, he warmed up at UMass, and it looked like he was going to play, but Eli Drinkwitz told us all that he had some back tightness during the travel to Massachusetts, and that caused him to not be able to play a snap in that game. He's still questionable to play in this game. Will be interesting to see how he's feeling heading into this one, and that's going to be a big thing for the Tigers as well, just for the simple fact that the running game has been a big focal point of this offense, with the passing game not being at the level it was last year. And Nate Noel has been, the outside of Luther Burden, the Tigers' biggest playmaker. So having him would be a huge boost if they can't. If not, it's going to be another night where Marcus Carroll is going to have to step up and handle the bulk of the carries in the backfield.
We're talking with Kyle Helms. He is a sports anchor and reporter with ABC 17 News in Columbia, mid-Missouri. Part of the issues offensively, and you talk about the run game, and for this Tigers team, obviously, they got to be able to run the ball and run the ball from a dominant fashion, but we've not seen great play from quarterback Brady Cook. What's holding him back right now, and what needs to happen for him to get back to the point that we thought he would be at this year?
I mean, in my opinion, I really just think he needs to just connect on that one deep ball. We haven't really seen it this year yet. You know, I think back to last year in that Kansas State game, early in the game when he connected with Luther Burden right out of the gate on that big touchdown pass early in the game. That wound up being really a turning point for that offense, I feel like. You know, they started a little slow in their early games last year while they were trying to still figure out the quarterback situation. So I really think it might just be, you know, one throw away from Brady getting some confidence back up and being able to get this passing game back to the level that everybody expected it to be at. You know, last week they were able to generate some more explosive plays, whether you look at Luther Burden's jet sweep early in the game or Joshua Manning in the third quarter taking a 50-plus yard touchdown back to the house. So it's good to see those big plays getting generated. Now I think it's all about, can Brady get into a rhythm and try to generate some more of those explosive chunk plays in the pass game? I think it's really just a confidence thing, and I think once the Tigers really start to put something together there, then it's going to be really smooth sailing for him.
Kyle Helms covers Missouri athletics for ABC 17 News. Again, you follow him on Twitter at Kyle Helms ABC 17. Kyle, thanks so much for the time. Hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Absolutely. A lot of fun getting to talk to you. Invite me back anytime. I'd love to be back on.
That's Kyle Helms joining us on the program again. You see him and you watch him there on ABC 17 in Columbia. He's on Twitter at Kyle Helms ABC 17, and we appreciate him taking a few moments. I was you look at this game, and Missouri is a 4-point favorite. Missouri should win this game. I heard Bernie Miklas talk about this earlier today when he did his one of his weekly hits with the Dave Glover Show. And he feels very good about Missouri's opportunity to win tomorrow. clearly Missouri is a more talented team than Auburn. The game is at home. Missouri's kind of been challenged here a little bit, and I think they are well aware that what they did last week doesn't really hold much weight towards them being a good team moving forward. They were supposed to win against UMass by a 45-3 score, just as they did. But they still need to put that really good effort on the field. And I think some Tigers fans are rightfully a little bit concerned about tomorrow's game, just because you really haven't seen Missouri put it all together against a pretty good team. And in many ways, that Vanderbilt win has kind of turned into their best win, because you think about who Vanderbilt has turned into. All of a sudden, they're a team that's got back-to-back wins against SEC teams, including a game against then number one Alabama, and then they follow that up with a win on the road against Kentucky. Vanderbilt, I think, is better than any of us actually expected them to be, and now they're a couple wins away from bowl eligibility, Vanderbilt is, and they're going to have a non-league game this weekend against Ball State. So if they can win that game, all of a sudden they've got to win just one more game to get to bowl eligibility, and they've got some very winnable games left on their schedule. Not super winnable, but winnable. For Vanderbilt, they'll still take on number one Texas. That's going to be tough at home. I don't think Vanderbilt's going to knock off the number one team in the nation twice in one season. They'll go to Auburn, home against South Carolina. That's going to be the key for them. That game against South Carolina at home, for them to get to that sixth win, that's going to be their key game left, because then they'll finish out the year going to LSU. That's going to be a tough one to win. And then home against Tennessee, also going to be tough to win. So even with them sitting two wins away from bowl eligibility with a very winnable game coming up tomorrow. But all that being said, I think Vanderbilt is better than any of us thought that they were going to be. Quick update on what's going on in the baseball postseason. It's getting a little bit more interesting between the Mets and the Dodgers. In many ways, it feels like this is just Operation Survival right now for the Mets, a team that has already scored 10 runs. They scored 10 runs in their first four innings. But the Dodgers, too, because they're the Dodgers and they're not going to give up on this one, they scored a run in the fourth, three runs in the fifth, one more in the sixth. And all of a sudden, this is just a four-run game, 10-6, and the game is currently in the bottom of the sixth inning. If I was the Mets, I would do everything that I can to add on some runs, because I'm not actually convinced. This is a crazy statement to say. I'm not convinced that 10 runs wins this game, just the way things are going right now. And the Mets, by the way, are threatening in the bottom of the sixth inning. They've got runners on at second and third and nobody out, so they may just take my advice and add on to their run scoring output. All right, we will take a break, and when we return, we'll continue to talk through everything that's going on in the postseason, as we are set to be joined by Levi Weaver, part of the team covering Major League Baseball for The Athletic. He joins us in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Continuing to take you through this Friday evening, keeping you updated on what's going on in the baseball playoffs. It is just a wild one right now in New York. The Mets have indeed added on in the sixth inning. They score another run, and they answer the run that the Dodgers scored in the top of the sixth. It is now an 11-6 game. The Mets have the lead, and who knows how many runs it's actually going to take to win that game today. Right now, happy to go to the guest line. We bring in part of the team at The Athletic. He writes the wind-up Major League Baseball newsletter for The Athletic, in addition to doing a few other things. You follow him on Twitter at 32EFIS. He is Levi Weaver. Levi, thanks for taking the time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, of course. I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. This is a wild game going on right now, but you know, the Mets got out to that big lead. They scored 10 runs in the first few innings, and I don't know if 10 runs is going to be enough to win this game the way it's going.
I know. I thought I was going to be able to relax and look away, and then all of a sudden it's 10-6. Well, here we go. We don't know for sure. You know what? Frankly, like, I kind of, with no rooting interest for either team, all I really want is for this game to be an entertaining game, because we really haven't had any of those in the NLCS. They've all been, whoever wins by at least four runs, and in the case of the Dodgers, more than that. So, yeah, it's nice for there to be a little bit of intrigue, but yeah, it's, if they're not going to have a close game, at least have a chaotic wild one where they combine to score, you know, 17 plus runs.
Yeah, and that's the fact that they had 15 runs through five innings. And like, do you give the Mets any shot to still win this series if they find a way to win today?
Here's the honest truth, and I'm telling on myself a little bit here, but it is, I think, relevant to the question. I have stopped saying that I think the Mets are done, because I thought the Mets were done in April, and then I thought the Mets were done later in the season. And then, you know, they have to go play this ridiculous doubleheader in Atlanta. I didn't think they were going to beat the Brewers, and they did. Like, it's just, they were not supposed to be here in the first place. And they are here. And so, no, the Dodgers look on paper like a much better team. The Dodgers, I think, have more talent on the roster. But the Mets have proved me wrong so many times that I'm done. I'm done looking stupid by saying the Mets are done, because it's not worked out well for me saying that this year.
Pete Alonso hit another home run today. It's his fourth home run of the playoffs. Of course, we remember most notably that big home run that he hit against Milwaukee. He had a little bit of a down season this year. At times, it felt like there maybe wasn't a lot of interest from the Mets in bringing him back. We'll see what the first base market really ends up looking like. But in some ways, you know, we talk so often about pitchers going out and making themselves money by the way that they play in the playoffs. We don't talk about position players doing that too often. But it feels like Alonso has certainly helped himself at least a little bit with what he's done so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's definitely needed this postseason for sure. I mean, there was a chance in Milwaukee that was going to be his last at-bat as a Met, right? I mean, there I think has been a sentiment at least among the prognosticators that he might go elsewhere. You know, they didn't extend him. So, yeah, I mean, he's certainly at least shown us a little bit of a little glimpse of the polar bear of old. And we've been able to see that, okay, there's still something left in the tank. He's not as washed as he looked for some of the season. It was not a great regular season for him. And I know when it comes to evaluators, there are so many more numbers than I even have access to. And even with the new bat speed numbers we have access to, there's, you know, they have their own evaluation numbers, but yeah, it certainly can't hurt him to have shown up big in the postseason the way that he has.
I keep telling you're on in St. Louis. I keep telling Cardinals fans that there is something to learn from the Mets, and obviously the Mets still spend a ton of money. That's a very high payroll, but payroll came back this year. They brought in David Stearns to oversee the baseball operation. He's the guy who built up the Brewers, and he's going to make smart, prudent decisions. There's something to be said for bringing in, and these two teams are great examples. The Dodgers with the way the entire organization runs, and the Mets and what they're going to try to do now as David Stearns continues to put his program in place. They're teams that, yeah, they spend money, but they also do things in a very intelligent, smart kind of way. They don't just throw money around for no reason.
Yeah. It used to be that we had, you know, Andrew Friedman down in Tampa Bay, and it was like, you can be rich or you can be smart, and that gives us some parity in the league. And now Friedman's running the Dodgers, and Stearns came from the Brewers, and now he's running the Mets. And they've got two of the biggest payrolls, maybe the two biggest payrolls in baseball. So, they have done a good job of, you know, putting intelligent guys with a proven track record of succeeding with smaller budgets and giving them a shot at, you know, playing the rich guy for a while. And here we are. It's the NLCS. Those are the two teams that are left standing in the National League.
We're talking with Levi Weaver from The Athletic. Let's jump over and talk ALCS. Yesterday, it looked like the Rangers were, or not the Rangers, I just saw your profile from Texas, and I thought Rangers for a second. It felt like the Guardians were dead in the water, and all of a sudden, they lift themselves off the mat late in the game, and they come up with some big swings of the bat in the final couple innings. And that was a special game for Cleveland to be able to kind of be dead in that game and still find a way to win.
It really was. And I, you know, how many different game of the year candidates can we have in one postseason? It has been a phenomenal October. And that one might be it, though. I mean, for the Guardians to be down that far and, you know, you lose that game, and I really don't think there's a way for them to come back. Junkinsie Noel, I mean, just hit the ball and immediately flung the bat. There was no doubt off the bat. And then David Fry, who was, you know, he was a player to be named later at some point, made his first All-Star team this year. We just found out that he's been playing with an injury. I think it was an elbow injury that nobody really knew about in the second half. So his slow second half is kind of explained that way. Who would have thought in April? Like, I don't think I knew either of those names in April. If you had been like, oh, yeah, the postseason heroes in Cleveland are going to be Jonquinsi Noel. And first of all, I'd be like, okay, that's made up. Awesome name, though. Great work. And David Fry, which, you know, the only David FR that I've ever seen hit a home run that dramatic in the postseason, I don't want to talk about because you already mentioned I'm from Texas. So we don't have to talk about the he who shall not be named in this state. But it was equally as big. And I'm talking about 2011, of course. It wasn't equally as big. It's not the World Series, but it was very, very dramatic. What a game. And, you know, Cleveland gave themselves some life.
Look, Cardinals fans appreciate any David FR reference that we can get right now with the team not being in the playoffs the last couple seasons.
Yeah. That one still stings a little bit, less so after last year. I did make that joke on Twitter last night, and a lot of people roasted me. And I'm like, yeah, look, the Rangers won a World Series last year. Like, let it go. It's okay. It's been 13 years now.
Since we have you, are you at all concerned about the Rangers' trajectory coming off a year where they don't make it into the postseason and it did feel like there were some pretty obvious flaws for that Major League roster?
Yeah, there were a lot of injuries. But, you know, can you count on Corey Seager to stay healthy for 150 games? Like his track record says, probably not. Can you count on Josh Young to stay healthy for 150 games? His track record says, probably not. Adolis Garcia was dealing with some lower body stuff. You know, you can blame it on injuries, yes. And I think that is a valid thing to blame it on. Might blame it on, you know, World Series hangover. We don't know what that's like in Texas until this year, so maybe that's some of it. But I think there's still a good enough core and enough young guys. The big, big concern for me is Evan Carter's back. I mean, I think the Rangers really need him to be the star that he sort of showed signs of last year, but this is not a new issue with him to have a back injury, and it cost him most of the year this year. So if that's going to be a lingering thing, I think that's a big blow for them. I think they're set up to do well in the AL West next year. You know, the Mariners were so good at pitching and so bad at hitting. The Astros might lose Alex Bregman. I don't think there's any concern about the Angels being good anytime soon. So, you know, the A's, who knows what's going to happen with the A's in Sacramento. They're going to be better, I think, but I don't know that they're going to win the division. So there's a window for them. I'm not overly concerned, but no, it's not all smiles like it was this time last year.
And I saw the White Sox had some interest either in the bench coach and offensive coordinator Donnie Ecker and also Will Venable, the associate manager. So I don't know how much that can impact next year's team, but also when you think about the fact that the team probably will be looking for a new manager at some point in the next few years, just based off the age of Boach and everything, that those are guys that could have been in the running for that, and maybe they still will be, but they might, one of those guys could be leaving.
Yeah, my sense is that Will Venable is kind of the heir apparent, and the team has never said that. They've never sort of given any indication that that's the case, but it seems that way, given the interest that was, you know, it's not the first interest that a team has had in him as a manager. So it for him to take a role like he has in Texas, it would not at all surprise me if the thought was, hey, come sit under Boach for a couple of years, and when he's done, because he's not going to stick around forever, you know, you'll be the guy. Donnie Ecker is a really intelligent guy. I think he was maybe on that track in San Francisco. I don't know that it'll hamstring the Rangers to lose him. Tim Hyers is also a very good hitting coach. Coaches come and go, and you know, Donnie Ecker is a very smart guy. I think if he gets the job in Chicago, he'll do a great job there. But yeah, my sense is if the Rangers are going to let one of those guys go, this is pure speculation, and I should also note that now that I'm doing the newsletter, I am way less in the loop about the Rangers than I used to be. This is me speculating on a team I still pay attention to. I think Venable would stick around, and I think maybe if Sox want to hire Ecker, I think the Rangers would let him take a job.
Last thing for you, I ask you this because you do have a history with Baseball Prospectus as well. The big situation here going on in St. Louis is that Chaim Bloom is going to try to rebuild player development and then take over as president of baseball operations a year from now. But his project for the next year is to completely redo player development. Just from looking from very far away, what do you see from the Cardinals and what do you think they need to do in terms of that player development overhaul that Chaim Bloom is going to be overseeing?
Well, I'll preface this by saying I am not a player development expert, and so I'm probably not going to be very good at, you know, telling you exactly what machines they need and what drills they need to run. I will say that player development moves so fast. You know, the Rangers, when they were going to the World Series back in those, you know, 2010, 2011 years, they had a very strong farm system. They were kind of ahead of the game. And I remember talking to John Daniels because there was a core of players that came up that were supposed to be there was not supposed to be a rebuild. There's not supposed to be a gap. You know, Joey Gallo, Nomar Mazar, Rougned Odor, players like that. They just didn't pan out to be stars. And the Rangers had to rebuild their player development system in 2017, 2018. There were some things that were just not working. And JD told me, very frankly, like, I think we got a little bit complacent. We were ahead of the game for so long, and we just sort of thought, oh, we're ahead of the game. But it moves so fast. The technology moves so fast. The level to which you're able to know, you know, pitch tracking and tunneling and spin rates and how efficient a spin is, those things are important. And so, you know, if the Cardinals are behind at this point, I think Bloom is a very smart guy. I think that it is not for all of these things, and there are things that are proprietary per team, but it's not impossible to jump in and renovate a player development program and do it pretty quickly. I mean, the Rangers did that, and with 5-6 years they're in the World Series. I think that Bloom has these resources available to him, and if the Cardinals are behind, and you know, we haven't seen a ton of guys recently just come up and be those stars maybe that we thought they would be. It makes sense that it's time to take a look at it.
Levi Weaver writes the wind-up MLB newsletter for The Athletic. You should be subscribed to The Athletic. Levi, folks can follow you on Twitter as well, at 32EFIS. We really appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
Awesome. Very good. That is Levi Weaver joining us on the program at 32EFIS on Twitter if you want to follow along with everything that he's got going on. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We are starting to wrap up hour number one of the program. In hour number two, we are going to talk Illinois-Michigan with Doug Bouchon from the Illinois Rivals site, the Orange and Blue News. He's going to join us at about 6:35. Also, to start the 7 o'clock hour, Tony Bennett, the Virginia basketball coach, kind of abruptly retired and is very much connected to the state of college athletics. I think it's an interesting conversation to have, and we'll have that very conversation after the 7 o'clock news. Mentioned when we were talking with Levi Weaver a few moments ago, a couple of the individuals who are connected to the Texas Rangers, who reportedly the Chicago White Sox are interested in for their managerial vacancy. I don't think we ever talked about this, but about a week ago or so, John Heyman of the New York Post reported that the White Sox early list of targets included Cardinals bench coach Daniel Descalso. Now, I haven't heard anything more about this since that report. There's a lot of other individuals that have been more connected to it. And as we've heard more details about individuals who are actually going to get interviews, that I've not heard Descalso's name, but that was out there about a week ago from the New York Post and from John Heyman, who is generally okay at getting information right. Occasionally he gets it wrong, but Daniel Descalso's name is kind of out there. So we'll see if there's, we still don't know what it's going to look like on the Cardinals staff moving forward. We know some of the names that are not going to be there, but we don't know all the names that are going to be there. And that's something we'll learn as the offseason goes along. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.